Well, I feel blessed to be back in the pulpit after some weeks of absence and appreciate Brother Jim leading the church, filling in preaching, and having guest speakers as well. It is a great blessing. It seems a little odd that today we're actually going to speak message number 53 in the book of Acts, because it's been a while since we did message 52. But we want to conclude our exposition of Acts with a discussion of Paul's fifth missionary journey. Now, some people might say that Paul did three missionary journeys, sent by the church in Antioch and to the country of Turkey today, then to what would be Macedonia and Greece, and then throughout the entire Mediterranean world, the eastern part of the world, on the third journey. But as I mentioned a few sermons ago, we should consider the fourth missionary journey that began when he was arrested in Jerusalem and ends up under house arrest in Rome years later. Because though he was a prisoner in Caesarea and in on a prison ship going through the Mediterranean and then in Rome under house arrest waiting for his hearing before Nero, he spent years ministering. And so rather than just call it his three missionary journeys and then the journey to Rome, I call that the fourth missionary journey. The book of Acts terminates abruptly, and the subsequent history of Paul and the early church has much obscurity. Remember, Luke wrote book one about the life of Jesus in book two about the ministry of Paul. But he leaves Paul in Acts 28, where we concluded in the last verse of Acts 28, that Paul is under house arrest, still awaiting his trial. And so I think book three, we could look at by piecing together some of the biblical and historical hints that are in the different scriptures that were written during that time period. And it allows us to reconstruct a fifth missionary journey of Paul. And by the way, it's a journey that took more time and covered more distance than any of his previous journeys. And yet, since it's just bits and pieces that are clues for us, we don't even think about that. And so today I want to look kind of by year, but even that is up for debate, of what Paul did on this fifth missionary journey to help us kind of tie a bow around the book of Acts and all the study from the time Jesus ascended and commissioned his church to go out to the end of the New Testament era, where Paul and then John and others of the early church in the 90s, how that first century concludes. So we have two things. One, we have a detailed outline for you in the bulletin and online, and then we also have a map. And the map is kind of small, I apologize, but it has to fit in the bulletin. And the map is a pieced together picture of Paul's final fifth missionary journey in this follow-up to the book of Acts. So let's begin with Paul in Rome. And remember in Acts, in 61 and 62, Paul is under house arrest. But we don't know much beyond that. The concluding verses of Acts shows that his confinement was completed, because Luke says he spent two whole years there awaiting his hearing. And obviously this is now over, and the abrupt ending to the book of Acts leaves more questions than answers. It doesn't give us a detailed report about Rome, It doesn't talk about the Christians there. It doesn't talk about the church that he had written to back on his third missionary journey. Remember the book of Romans? Nothing is mentioned of that. All that is focused on is the Jews. Doesn't so we have to remember Paul's real enemy was not the Roman government. It was not Nero. Paul's real enemy was not the Gentiles that were out to get him. Pound on the air conditioner.
Hey, it's like
hey. I can preach louder than a baby can cry, but I'm not sure I can preach louder than the heating and the air conditioning as it starts its crazy noise cycle can handle it. So the real enemy that Paul faced were the Jews. He was trying to work with them and convert them. Any time that Paul was stoned or imprisoned or anything, it was all because of the Jews. He was driven out of cities because of the Jews. He was left for dead because of the Jews. And so the real enemy wasn't the government. Now, I know that might come as a shock to us in 2020, because some of us think of the government as more of our enemy than our friend. And we have to remember that the real enemy are people who will talk like we do, who will use scriptures, who will say, well, I'm a good Christian. I'm a believer. I was talking to a fellow 3 days ago, and we were, you know how it is, talking politics, because that's always such fun. We can always change somebody's mind by talking about the current events and what's happening and how, you know, this fellow is a never-Trumper. No matter whatever, I won't vote for Trump and I won't vote for any Republican because they're all a bunch of evil people. And I said, who are you going to vote for? He said, I'm going to write in my own name. So that led to a little discussion there we got there. You know, vote for Bob, by the way, just put that in on your ballot in a few weeks here. But we got talking and he said, well, you know, I'm a Christian. But he said, I don't agree with all the things that the Republican Party holds. And I said, well, I don't either. I said, I was a Democrat. I changed to be a Republican, and now a few years ago, I had to leave my elected position and everything as a Republican because of a stroke. I recognize the brain damage that most of our politicians have but don't want to recognize. And so I said, well, I'll step down from my position. He said, you know, I'm a good Christian like you are, but he says, I believe that they should have gay rights and blah, blah, blah. And we should have abortion on demand. And I said, well, maybe your definition of good Christian and mine are different. You see, in this day and age, it's just like Paul. Our enemies are those who claim the same belief that we do. They say, oh, I'm just like you. I love freedom and I love these things and I love the Lord and I read his word and I pray. I can do the Our Fathers and the Hail Marys and I can do all these different things. Paul was dealing with legal issues with Nero, but the big problem that he had was with his Jewish fellow citizens. And Paul had been flying under the radar of Rome, as it were, until he asked for the appeal himself. So what happened in Rome? We don't have all the details. Luke says Paul's there for 2 years. End of Acts. Well, we do know that he had a hearing before Caesar and Nero because Acts 27, verses 23 and 24, God had promised and said that an angel of God stood before me and said, don't be afraid, you will stand before Caesar. So even though we don't have a verse that says Paul stood before Caesar and a verse that says this is what he told Caesar, we do know 100% certainty that Paul did stand and give testimony before Caesar. God kept his promise. And Paul was released unconditionally. That means there was no guilt. And of course, we recognize that because there were no charges, there were no witnesses, there were no nothing. I'm sure the Romans are, you know, as Paul is giving his defense to Caesar, they're probably looking at their sundials and saying, oh man, you know, this is a waste of our time here. There's no evidence. Let, you know, call him innocent and let him out of here. Now, Paul was the details of this are unimportant. It just simply, he was released. Now remember, on his first journey, he wrote one letter to the Galatian churches, the churches in Lystra and Derbe, Iconium, Pisidian, Antioch, and that area. On his second journey, he wrote two letters back to the church at Thessalonica. On his third journey, he wrote two letters to the, well, he actually wrote three, but we won't get into the discussion, to the Corinthians, because 1 Corinthians in our Bible says, now remember what I wrote in my first letter, which kind of gives you a clue that there was a letter there ahead of time, but not included in our inspired scripture. And to the Romans, and in prison for 2 years, Paul had written to the church at Ephesus, at Philippi, at Colossae, and then to Philemon, who was a member of the church of Colossae. And Paul is waiting. He's waiting for this hearing. He's waiting for his freedom. And so in reading these things, if you look at Philippians chapter 1, verses 19 and following, he says, I pray to be delivered. I pray that this will all work out. It'll all turn out for my freedom. And that's my eager expectation. I'm not ashamed, but if I live, I live. If I die, I die. He said, that's not important to me. And so he's excited about being able to make his defense and then be free to continue on, as he wrote from his house arrest in Rome to the church at Philippi, that I know that if I'm alive, I'll come and see you again, and if I'm not, I'll see you in glory. Kind of like the way we still talk today, that this is the way it is. And Eusebius, one of the early church historians, who tell us about like the Council of Nicaea and so forth that happened in the 300s, said that Paul didn't die here in Rome at this point. He was just where the book of Acts ends. So what happened to Paul? Well, notice the next point, Spain. We move from Rome to Spain. It's now 63, maybe even going into 64 AD, and he wants to go to Spain. This is his goal. It's a new mission field. Now, he wrote to Philemon that he wanted to return to his old mission field. Philemon, remember, is in Colossae, up in the middle of what we would think of a inland in Turkey. He told Philemon in that letter that he wrote from house arrest, he said, prepare a guest room for me. I hope through your prayers that I'll be graciously given to you, that God will allow me to go there. So he wants to return to visit his friend Philemon and the churches that he's planted. But if you think of where Paul was, and that's where this little map may help you, Paul is over in Italy. Y'all know Rome. Okay, it's still there. Ruins are still there. He's over in Italy, and if he has to go down around Sicily and Italy and around Crete and up to Asia and then inland to Colossae, that is a distance of 1,800 miles to the east. Where he is in Rome, it's only 700 miles to Barcelona. So that means right across the northern part of the Mediterranean, he can go right across only 700 miles west and be in Spain, because that is where he wanted to be. Remember, on his journey, in the third missionary journey, he wrote to the church at Rome. In Romans 15, verses 22, he said, this is the reason I've been so often hindered from coming to you, but now I no longer have any room for work in these regions, where he is back in Asia. And since I've longed to come to you, I hope to see you in passing as I go to Spain, and to be helped on my journey there by you once I've enjoyed your company. In other words, I need your missionary support, because I'm going to head to Rome, and then I'm going to head to Spain. He said, therefore, when I completed this, and I'm delivering the collection to the saints in Jerusalem, end of journey three, he said, I'll leave for Spain by way of Rome. Now, he had no idea at that point. God hadn't revealed to him that, yes, he would end up leaving for Rome, but it would be on a prison ship and heading to house arrest for Caesar at that time. But he says, I'm going to head to Spain as soon as I can by way of Rome. And I know that when I come to you, it'll be in the blessings of the Lord. Now, Clement, a disciple of John, the Apostle John, about 90 AD, 25 years after this, wrote, and this is a direct quotation translated, he said, Paul had preached in the East and in the West. He won genuine glory for his faith, having taught righteousness to the whole world, having even reached the furthest limit to the West. Now, you all know your history, that the Roman Empire covered the entire Mediterranean world and all the way up to Britain and North Africa and so forth. But to the West, the furthest you can go is Spain. And so here, just a few decades after Paul died, this Christian leader, Clement, wrote and said that Paul had done that. And so Paul's plan was to go to Spain, and that, matter of fact, in Clement, he actually lists three of the cities where Paul went and started churches. And I know it's probably impossible without my wife's magnifying glass to read them on the little map that's there, but it's Terico, Toletum, and Hispalis, three different locations on the Iberian Peninsula, the region we call Spain today. And so Paul is free. He's found not guilty. He's already in Rome. Rather than go all the way back east to Colossae, which he wants to do to see Philemon, his heart is to continue from Rome, just like his plan. God's going to lead me to Rome and then to Spain. And so here he went on to Spain. And remember, there's no persecution at this time of Christians. Don't get Nero and the lions. There was no Colosseum, so there were no lions in the Colosseum at this time. Hadn't been built yet. The idea that people get sometimes is that, oh, this was really tragic and terrible. That's going to come. But when Paul is released, he is free then to travel and to be able to minister. And so that leads us to 64, 65. And again, the dates are a little bit iffy. And see what he did. After leaving Spain, he wants to go back to Asia, to the churches that he worked with there. And so the first place he has to visit is the island of Crete. He'd not been there previously. They had sailed around Crete on his journey to Rome, but now he is in Crete. He writes to Pastor Titus, who is there in Crete. Later on, he writes and says to him, he said, Titus, this is why I left you in Crete. I left you. I was there with you, and I left you there in Crete, so that you might continue to put in order what remains, and you might appoint elders for each town as I directed. So evidently, Paul gathered Titus, one of his followers, and took him to Crete and dropped him off after preaching there. We don't know how long, but he left Titus there to continue the ministry that he had. He then went on to the shore, the coast, the west coast of Asia, to the city of Ephesus. And there we read in 1 and 2 Timothy that Timothy was left. He was the pastor there. Paul had set him there. and told him in 1 Timothy 1, verse 3, he said, Timothy, remain in Ephesus so that you might charge certain persons not to teach different doctrine. You see, there were problems in the church in Ephesus. Paul had been there. The church had been founded. He'd been there in the second journey, on the third journey. And now he's back there with Timothy and writing to Timothy and talks about the opposition. He talked about men like Alexander the coppersmith, who did great evil. He harmed him. I don't know what happened. We're not, again, given the details. But he said the Lord will repay him. And there was obviously a large-scale falling away of believers in Asia, in the area where Paul had ministered. In 2 Timothy 1, verse 15, he says, you're aware that everyone in Asia has turned away from me, including Phygelus and Hermogenes. And so Paul is back in the area where he had ministered, but it was different. And he's encouraging Timothy now. He'd spent time with Pastor Titus in Crete, and now Pastor Timothy. And I think that what happens in the next text happened quickly. They're in rapid succession, and I don't have any chance to put a time to it. But just envision now that Paul has left Spain, gone to Crete, gone up to Ephesus, and now he heads inland to Philemon at Colossae. It's about a 135-mile trip up the Meander River. It takes about 5 days' hike because it climbs about 1,000 feet in elevation. So it's going up to the plateau of the Anatolian Plateau, the inland area of Turkey today. And someone said, well, maybe Paul continued on and went to Derbe and Iconium and Lystra and Antioch. And, well, then you're talking hundreds and hundreds of more miles. We have no indication in Scripture of that. And we're talking months of travel. And so we just would have to say, okay, he made it to Colossae. But, folks, I've stood there on the mound that has the ruins of Colossae underneath it. It's not been excavated one bit. It's just a giant mound. And you have the river running by. You can look and see the highlands where Hierapolis and Laodicea are. Literally, I can guarantee you, because I did it, just a walk from Colossae. And so he could have visited other places. We just don't know for sure. We do know that he did go back down to the sea to Miletus. Now here, the map shows he lands at Miletus and goes up, and I think it's a little bit, he went to Ephesus and then Colossae and then left from Miletus. But he wanted to head to Macedonia. He wanted to go up into Greece. Again, Paul is going back as his pattern was. He did one new mission field in Spain, but then it's to go back to the churches and encourage and teach. Because, folks, that's what pastors do. Pastors spend their life doing what I'm doing here. Educating, teaching, preaching, training you. Why? Number one, you need it. Okay? You need to listen to every word I say. Oh, wait, that's what I told my children. They didn't believe it either. But you need... You know, that's what we need as Christians. We need to read the Word. We need to have it explained. We need to have it given the sense of it. Like in Nehemiah's day in Ezra 8:8, where they read the book of the law, they translated it and gave the sense so that the people understood. That's what happens. We all need that. And number two reason, not only do we need to do that, you got to take my place. Did you know that I'm going to die? I know some of you are going, no, that'll never happen. Last time I checked, no one gets out of this world alive. And I know probably more than I want to know about how close to dying a person can get. And I know that you say, well, you're not that old. I know she didn't say you're not old. You didn't say, you say that you're not that old. I always thought I would look to retire when I was 80. I would sell my house here in Casper and move back to somewhere and sit back and put my feet up and eat bonbons and just enjoy life when I get 80 or so. My wife and I had a chat about aging and health. And she looked at me. This is my dear sweet wife. She's going to listen to this message online. I'll erase this part. She looked and said, do you really think we're going to live to be 80?
Now,
halfway, yeah. Folks, death is real. So a pastor's job is to say, okay, this is what I'm doing to help everyone right now so you grow and you mature and you learn, because I'm going to be stepping off the scene. Now, we talked last January about my retirement and that this year would be a year where I'd kind of phase out a little bit and sit back, and then towards December I would phase out some more, and we don't know how God's going to handle it all. Nobody in January talked about COVID. Can you believe that? They must have been hiding it from us. Nobody talked about how this whole year was going to be messed up beyond our thinking. Paul said, I want to go back. I want to visit people in Ephesus and Colossae and maybe the other cities there that I've been before. And then I'm going to head to Macedonia. So he got to Miletus. Are you with me in the outline here? He gets to Miletus, which is the seaport of Ephesus. And in 1 Timothy 3, he writes later to Timothy, he says, I urged you when I was leaving for Macedonia to remain in Ephesus. Timothy, your job is stay preaching, be a pastor, Tim, in Ephesus. I'm going to head on to Macedonia, which is Philippi, Thessalonica, that region, Berea, and so forth. And so I don't know why he ended up there, but I suppose it was you catch a ship and you travel then up the Aegean coast and end up in Macedonia, or what we would think of as northern Greece today. Later on, when he writes to Timothy a second time in 2 Timothy 4:20, he says, I left Trophimus, one of his traveling companions, who was sick at Miletus. He made it to Miletus. He said, okay, remember, I left him there. Evidently, when he writes to Timothy the second letter, he has no clue what happened to Trophimus. Now, I'm thinking, why didn't Paul just lay hands on him and heal him, right? If Paul had the faith that Bob has, oh, wait, that's not the way that goes. It's if Bob had the faith Paul had. Hey, healing is from God. Don't be duped by the modern health and wealth culture of the Christian. I'm doing air quotes here for those who can't see. The Christian culture that says that God wants us to be healthy. And if we just eat right and that, we'll be perfectly healthy. I heard when I was a young teenager, I heard Oral Roberts preach that. Y'all know who Oral Roberts is? Great preacher, great evangelist, but big into the health movement and into the, you know, if you just have faith and send us a $100 donation, you'll get better, or whatever his message might be. I heard him preach, and then I heard that he started a university with a hospital. And I thought, if you believe God heals, just because you say, God, I want this person healed, I'm going to strike him on the forehead like Benny Hinn, or lay a cloth on my radio and then put it on his head, and they'll be healed. Why didn't Paul do this? He left Trophimus sick. And a year later, he writes to Timothy and says, I kind of wonder how he's doing. Did he survive? He didn't know the condition. Well, He continues, gets on a ship in Miletus, and now heads back up to Europe, to his other area of previous ministry. He stops at Troas, which is still on the Asian coast, or the what we would think the left-hand coast of Turkey. And he stopped at Troas because these are small ships, and they're just going port to port to port all the way up and around the Aegean Sea there. And so the ship would have stopped at Troas. And Paul again adds in 2 Timothy 4:13, writing to Timothy, asking him to come. We'll see where in a minute. But he says to Timothy, when you come, bring the cloak that I left with Carpus, one of the disciples, at Troas. There's the clue. So he's journeying up. Obviously, then he stopped at Troas and left his cloak, the books, and the parchments. Now, when we think of cloak, what do you think of? Like an overcoat, something like that? Part of the time, that's what it means, and part of the time, it's simply a case made out of like the fabric of a coat, and it's an overcoat for books or for papers or whatever it might be. I can't see Paul going anywhere without his all-weather cloak that he has for winter, summer, rain. He's got that, but boy, he took off from Troas, and he left books and parchments, I think, in his traveling valise, his case, his waterproof cloak case, the cape for or what would we call it, like a book bag. And he says, I have books, I have parchments. Books are papyrus leaves and pages like we would have in our hymn book or our Bibles, now made from wood pulp, not reed, but that was what books were. Parchment it's the word membrane. I'm trying to think of what in the Greek. It like skin, like you skin a goat or a sheep or something like that, and you skin it, you tan it all out, and then you write on it. That was typical parchment. That's what people wrote on in those days. So he said, okay, I'm at Troas. Now he ends up in Macedonia, up at the northern part of Greece. And remember he said, I'm leaving for Macedonia to Timothy in 1 Timothy 1:3. We don't know anything else. We don't know what happened up there. We have no record whatsoever, but that's where he was headed. He made it partway to Troas, we know that. And so we're assuming he did that. Then Achaia, or the southern part of Greece, what we would think of Corinth and Athens and Sparta and those regions, that he continues now down the other side of the coast of the Aegean Sea, down the Greek side. And we don't know all the details, but we know he was there because he writes in Titus chapter 3, verse 12, he said, I will send Artemas or Tychicus to you. Now, this is to Pastor Titus out on Crete. And he says, do your best to come to me at Nicopolis, for I've decided to spend the winter there. Nicopolis is on the Adriatic side of Greece, on the side towards Italy, if you're looking on your little map. And Nicopolis would be right. Nicopolis is right above, what's the island that's there? It's a resort island. Corfu? Yeah. And so it's a, you know, kind of a nice wintering area, warmer, going to be not the storms that you're going to get on the Aegean side. He said, I'll be there. So he writes to Titus and says, I'm going to send a replacement. You come and we'll hook up in Nicopolis. To Pastor Timothy, he writes and says, he's talking about being alone. We're going to look at in great detail at chapter 4 of 2 Timothy in a couple of minutes here. He says, Erastus, another one of the ones traveling with him, remained behind at Corinth. Erastus was from Corinth, if you go back in the book of Acts. So obviously they were both at Corinth. And then Paul saying, okay, I'm going to leave Achaia or the Greece and I'm going to go over to the warm climates over on the Adriatic Sea coast. And I am going to send a pastor to help Titus, and I want Timothy to come and meet us there. I can see what he's doing. Did I mention Paul's getting old? He's been in prison. He's had all these different things happening, and now he's saying, okay, I visited these churches. That's good. Now I got a couple of pastors. We're going to get together, and we're going to have a pastor's conference. We're going to have a fellowship. I know just the resort up here in Nicopolis, and I'll wait for you. Timothy, you come. Titus, you come, and we'll make plans for the next journey, the future. Well, man plans, God laughs. Paul's plan seems to have fallen through here. The last place that we read him being is at Nicopolis, or wanting to go there at least from Corinth, that's where he was headed. Evidently, that was the site where he was arrested. He was already noted back in Acts 24, verse 5, that he was a ringleader of the group called Christians. And then later he tells Timothy, come before winter. So if you do the math, now we're into 65, and he wants to winter in Nicopolis, but he's not going to be there because he is arrested and taken to Rome. And that leads us to the third part of the fifth missionary journey. Paul is taken to Rome and imprisoned. Now remember, in Caesarea for 2 years he was in prison, but he was living in the governor's mansion. Not a real difficult prison there. When he was on a ship and they were shipwrecked in Malta, he was taken in by the richest man on the island. Not a bad way to live. When he went to Rome the first time there for his hearing, he wasn't thrown in prison. He was put under house arrest with a Roman guard there with him. But he had freedom to come and go and do what he wanted for 2 years there. So in the past, it was not difficult. But now, in the end of the winter of 65 and into 66, and maybe into 67 even, we're not sure of the date, he ends up in the Mamertine prison. This is called in the Roman literature the House of Darkness. It was a place that was terrifying in appearance, in sound. People were in there. Now, when we think of prison, what do we think of? If you were in prison in Torrington, if you were in prison in Rollins, what would prison be like for you? Or in Lusk, if you ladies are here. What?
Bars.
Yeah, you'd have bars. You can't get out of the walls, hopefully.
3 meals a day.
You'd have health care, right? You'd have 3 meals a day. Matter of fact, when I think about retiring, health care. Free health care, free meals. I could retire in Rollins.
And, A weight room.
Pardon?
A weight room
so I can get exercise? Yeah, okay. It's not, you know, prisons in Paul's day were not prisons like they are today. There were no television, there were no benefits whatsoever. Prison was not a place for people to go and be rehabilitated, serve out a year or 10 years or whatever it might be, and then be released. Prison was a place not for punishment, but it was a holding cell for execution. If you went to prison, if you're thrown in there with the 80 other people in the Mamertine prison, you're all going to die. Now, there might have to be a court hearing or something in there, but pretty much government threw you in there. You're going to die. Even if you look in the Old Testament, the Mosaic Law doesn't talk about incarcerating prisoners. It talks about the prisoner paying for his crime, financially, restitution or whatever like that, serving, whatever it might be, or being executed. It doesn't have a great deal about what we think of as a modern prison system in the world today. Now, we know that he received help and encouragement from Onesiphorus in 2 Timothy 1. He says in verse 16, "May the Lord grant mercy to the family of Onesiphorus." Onesiphorus had died. And he said, "Because he refreshed me and wasn't ashamed of my chains. When he arrived in Rome, he searched earnestly until he found me. May the Lord grant mercy." And then in 2 Timothy 4, if you want to turn there, we've got a number of verses to look at. As Paul writes, that's the last chapter of the last letter that he writes that we have for us. In 2 Timothy 4:11, he says, "Now only Luke is with me." I'm kind of glad that Luke, who had been with him through much of the book of Acts, is now finally back with Paul and ministering to him, because, again, the Romans didn't feed you in prison. If you're in the Mamertine prison, your friends or family had to bring you food or you died. You starved to death. If you were sick, they had to bring you the items needed. The government had no responsibility whatsoever. And by the way, it was that way for centuries. You read of Bunyan in prison in the Bedford Jail in England. His family had to scrape together food and bring it to him. And this was the way it's always been. It was not a place to coddle or rehabilitate prisoners. And so in verse 11, he says, "Only Luke is with me." And then he sought help and said, "Timothy," he said, "find John Mark and bring him with you, for he's helpful in the ministry." So Paul is looking for help. He's in prison, and he's got only Luke with him. He's arraigned for the crime of being a Christian. If you look at verse 16, 2 Timothy 4:16, you have your Bible open. He said, "At my first defense, no one came to stand by me. All deserted me." So he's arrested. He's taken to Rome. At his first defense, this is not talking about his earlier trial before Nero. But here he says, "Everyone's deserted me." Demas, verse 10. Starts out by saying, "Demas, in love with this present world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica." Demas, who was a close associate, one of the closest, next to Timothy and Titus, Demas was probably the next pastor. If you read Colossians 4 and Philemon 24, when he's writing from prison, Demas is there. He's helping him. And now, after this fifth journey, and now he ends up full circle back in Rome, and says, "Even Demas has forsaken me." He's headed up to the North Woods, up in Thessalonica. He only had a handful of friends. Verse 21 of 2 Timothy 4. He says, "Eubulus sends greetings to you. So do Prudence, Linus, Claudia, and the brothers." Abandoned by most, but there's still a few Christians there in Rome. But Paul is lonely. He's abandoned by almost everyone. He's at the end of his life. He's almost 70. And he knows that he's never going to get out alive now. That unless God opens the prison doors like he did for Peter back in Acts, he said, I'm going to die here. But look at his heart, verse 10 again. 2 Timothy 4:10, the second part of that verse, after saying that only Luke is with, or excuse me, after saying Demas had forsaken him, he said, "Crescens left for Galatia." Now, he's one of Paul's ministers, one of his boys. And he's gone off to Galatia to minister. So Paul says, I'm lonely. Titus was here. But Titus went up to Dalmatia. If you think of going up that east, that coast of Greece and what would now be Albania and Serbia and the old Yugoslavia, get that idea on the Adriatic Sea that's going to come around to Italy on the other side. That's the Dalmatian coast. That's where Titus has gone. Evidently, he wasn't arrested with Paul in Nicopolis. And so Titus was in Dalmatia. And so now he's Croatia in that area, 500 miles further up the coast of the Adriatic. And then he adds in verse 12, he says, Tychicus, I've sent to Ephesus. That'll free Pastor Timothy to come to Rome. Titus had already been there to meet him, but Paul had been arrested, so Titus isn't available now. But Paul doesn't expect acquittal. He doesn't expect to be released. He knows what God is doing. And listen to me, he trusts God. Now, it's easy when you're 18 to say, I trust the Lord. The Lord will lead me to the right college. He'll lead me to the right man or woman to marry. He'll lead me down the road. But when you're 70 and in prison awaiting execution, Paul was a realist and says, okay, I'm going to die. Look back in chapter 4. I told you to keep in 2 Timothy chapter 4. Look at verse 6. He says, I'm already poured out like a drink offering. The time of my departure has come. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I've kept the faith. For 18 months, Paul remained in prison before he was finally executed. But he was ready to die. He was ready back in his first imprisonment. For me to live as Christ, to die, is gain. He's ready when he went and left the church in Antioch and ended up being stoned and left for dead in Iconium or Derbe or Lystra, one of those places that I get confused, those three cities that I don't keep it all straight. But he was ready. You see, we have to be ready no matter what if God says this is the time. Now, why was he arrested now? Why were Christians being persecuted now in 65 and 66 and into 67? Well, the life had changed dramatically. On July 19th of 64, a fire broke out in Rome. Nero was not there. He didn't fiddle. He didn't even know what a fiddle was, by the way. The word there in the Latin is a liar, L-Y-R-E. And that was a story told, but Nero wasn't even there. But Nero wanted the whole heart of the city of Rome to be leveled. Five-story wooden tenement buildings with tens of thousands of residents. Just a virtual slum, as it were, in the inner city. He wanted it leveled so he could rebuild. He had a whole outline and maps drawn of the new Capitolina, the new Roman capital, with all new beautiful marble buildings, and put the poor people outside. Get them out of the inner city. Move them out to the suburbs. A fire broke out. There are 14 districts in Rome, and 10 of the districts were just devastated with this fire. The fire went for over a week. And it just, you can imagine, five-story wooden buildings. If you look at the ruins of Rome, all you see now are the marble and the granite and the beautiful ruins of the buildings that were permanent. But wooden buildings, they'd be just tinder for the fire to come through. But of the 14 districts, 10 were decimated. But of the four that were untouched, two of them were inhabited by Christians and two by other religious groups. And so Nero, in his sub-infinite wisdom, decides, let's blame the Christians, because look, everybody's jealous. Their area wasn't burned. Our area was. They didn't have people killed. We had thousands die in this terrible fire. And so people with their hatred of Christians, Christians who refuse to be involved in the social life, they refuse the pagan worship or the emperor worship that was common in Rome. They were the outcasts of society, so let's blame it on them and let's arrest and kill the Christians and get even. That's what's happened. So that's why Paul is here in prison now. It's fair game for Christians to be killed. So late in 66 or in January of 67, the church historian, again Eusebius, tells us that Paul was taken outside the city to a place of execution about 3 miles out from the downtown of Rome. And because he was a Roman citizen, they simply took a short sword, the thrusting sword that the Roman soldiers had. For you're holding the shield, you just got a little short sword to attack your enemy, that he was executed. Some said he had his head cut off, but that would be really difficult with the typical sword of the day. He was spared the ignominious fate of a non-Roman citizen, but he was executed nonetheless. The historian says that on that same day, in the same place of execution, Peter, who had been traveling in the Holy Land in that area, had come to Rome, and he too was arrested, and on that day, Peter and his wife were both executed. The historian says that Peter's wife was abused and stripped and nailed to a cross. And as the Romans, part of the punishment of Peter was to chain her face to face as she was dying on the cross. And he was chained to her. And he kept whispering, "Remember the Lord." And when she finally died from the crucifixion and the wounds and the beatings, he was taken and about to be crucified. And you know the story, right? Peter said, "I'm not worthy to die like Jesus." So they turned the cross upside down and nailed him with his head down and nailed him to the cross so that he might have that same fate. Serving the Lord cost. It cost Paul everything in his life. Family, friends, his wealth, his health, and eventually his freedom and his life. It cost Peter, it cost everyone. He on this follow-up, this fifth missionary journey, he had a little time to spread the gospel to a new area of Spain, but most of the time it was just visiting with his friends, visiting with his old church people, telling them and encouraging the young pastors, Titus and Timothy. God allowed him the time to minister until he finally took him home. But you know, Acts is not the end of the story. The death of Paul, the death of Peter, is not the end of the story. 30 years later, John is going to die, the youngest of the disciples. He will be ordered, condemned to death, but then didn't die, being scalded in oil. And so he was exiled to Patmos, to a labor camp in an island there in the Aegean Sea, off the coast of Ephesus, where he had pastored before. The fifth missionary journey is not the end of the story. The death of the apostles didn't end it. The dark ages of a corrupt church that killed, listen to me, the persecution of the dark ages and the Reformation, more Christians died at the hands of other Christians than died at the hands of the Romans during all this time that we've been reading. But it didn't stop the church. To quote Winston Churchill, a hero of mine, after England had withstood the Blitz, night after night of bombing and destroying the country, and the Nazi invasion was turned aside and it couldn't get across the channel, there was still a war to be fought. There were still battles to be won and enemies to be conquered. But Churchill said these famous words. He said, after the Blitz was over, he said, "This is not the end." He said, "It's not even the beginning of the end. But perhaps it's the end of the beginning." I don't have prophetic ability to know what's ahead for us. But we're talking about the early church here. We're talking about difficult, horrible times, challenging times. But 2,000 years of history behind us now, we might need to look at them and think maybe we're still in the early church. Maybe God has a plan that we can't even begin to understand right now. We look at this and say, what is this world coming to? The evil going on, and the Lord has to come back soon. Or maybe 10,000 years from now, people will call us at Sovereign Grace Church. Oh, they were part of the early church like Paul. We don't know. But we have to do the work, because this isn't the end. It isn't even the end, the beginning of the end. But it may be the beginning or the end of the beginning stage, and God's got much more work to be done. And I'm going to step off the scene, and you have work to do. And I sure would like to be like the Apostle Paul and look and say, oh yeah, there's, I remember that person. Yeah, it's like, that was like Titus. That's like Timothy. That's one who loved the Lord and served the Lord and stepped up to the battle. Lots of lessons, lots of encouragement, and I would even say lots of hope, because God's not done yet. Not done with me, not done with you, not done with this world. And when he is done, we'll all applaud and say, thank you, God, that's the right time. But until then, it's imperative for servants of God to be found faithful. That's all he asks, to be found faithful.